We're holding on Lamed Aleph on the day's four lines from the bottom. Continuing with the dinim of mezuzas, the Gemara says, "Amr Pelboy, Chazim leilat of Huna. I saw Rav Huna who did as follows with the mezuzah. First of all, dekori chlam echad klapi shma. Second, first of all, when he was rolling it up, he would roll it from echad in the direction of shma." Meaning, in other words, so you have, let's say, for example, the first line contains just the Pasuk Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, in practice, mezuzahs nowadays include more than that on the first line, but that's neither here nor there. The point is that he would roll it from the left to the right, so that the last thing rolled up is the word Shema. So this way, in other words, if you were to unroll it, then you would be unrolling it in the direction of, you'd be unrolling it and reading it in the direction of the writing, from right to left. So he would do that. And second of all, also, when Rav Huna would write a mezuzah, he would make the parshias in it, parshias stumas. Torah just points out there aren't really parshios in plural. There's only one space between Shema and Vahayim Shemaya. What it means is, in other words, that space, and Torah says, also we talked about yesterday at the end, that the mezuzah ends with the words Al Ha'aretz, and you have a space from there to the end of the line, so he would make that space, so there would be that space also. It's not technically a struma because there's nothing after it, but nevertheless, you can still say parshi yaseha in the plural. The difference between a parshi psucha and struma is basically, so you have the Rambam and the Rosh have a big argument about the proper form of a parshi psucha versus struma. Tosfos in our Sugya on the Beis Amud Aleph also talks about it in some detail. Everybody agrees that if you have a space in the middle of the line with some words before and some after, then that makes a parshas struma. And everybody agrees that if you have a space at the end of the line and the next one on an open space till the end of the line, and the next line begins at the beginning of the next line, as far right as possible, then that's definitely a parshas psucha. But there's a machlokas Rashi and the Rambam and the Rosh about various other possibilities. What if, for example, you have to have a parashat psucha, you have to have at least space of at least nine letters from the last word until the end of the line? What if you don't have enough space over there, and now you're going to leave some space on the next line? Would that make it a psucha or a struma? What happens if you went all the way to the end of the line and you put a blank line over there? What happens if you begin the next parasha in the middle of the line with space before it, but you didn't have space on the previous line, and various other permutations like that? So there's a number of cases where the Rambam will hold that it's a struma and the Rosh will hold it's a psucha, and vice versa. So here, there is even the Rid wants to say that when the Gemara says over here that he would make the parashah stumas, means he wouldn't actually make a parashah break at all between Shema and Vahayim Shemaya. But most Rishonim learn that no, that's not what it means. It means that there would be a space there, just that it would be made as a struma. So in other words, either that would mean that he began Vahariyam Shemaya on the same line as the end of Shema, or it means that he would do one of the other ways of doing it, which according to the Rosh or the Rambam are considered a struma. We'll talk about soon in the Gemara. In practice, how is it done in Megillus nowadays? So the Gemara says, Mace, I have a contradiction. So Rav Chelba is telling us that, in particular, let's focus on the fact that he says that Rav Huna made the parashiyas of the mezuzahs strumas. So we look. But a brisa says Amr of Shimon Elazar, Reb Meir hoya koisval duchsus. So first of all, says Reb Shimon Elazar, Reb Meir would write the Megillah on duchsus. Now we're going to talk later. We're going to talk later in the Gemara on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph that there were three different types of skins that can be used to write Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzas. Different depending which layers of the skin you use. The Gvil, Klaf, and duchsus. We'll talk about them in the Gemara further on. So Rav Meir would write the mezuzah on duchsus. One of those layers, which we'll talk about later on. He would make it like a long. He would make it like a column in a sefer Torah, long and skinny. He would leave a space on the parchment above and below the writing, so he wouldn't write all the way until the edge of the parchment. He would leave a little space. The Gemara will define soon how much that space is supposed to be. As a practical matter, the Beis Yosef points out we learned a few days ago that you have to have Every letter has to be mukaf gvil. It has to be surrounded by blank parchment. So as a practical matter, you can't really write literally until the end of the parchment anyhow. Otherwise, it won't be mukaf gvil. But he would leave a larger space than that, as we'll see soon. So he'd make a, he would leave a space on the top and on the bottom. But Oisip Parshi Yosef, Tosfos points out, the Gemara doesn't specify how much space there needs to be on the side, and Tosfos suggests that maybe you need, the same way as with the Sefer Torah, you need, the dinez at the end of the Torah, you need enough blank parchment to surround the entire thing up until that point. Meaning, in other words, if you were to roll up the Sefer Torah in one roll, as we do, like when we get to the Zayis HaBracha, you have to have enough blank parchment at the end of it there to be able to surround the entire Sefer Torah up to that point. So then maybe the same idea would be with a, maybe the same idea would be with a mezuzah, but, other Rishonim disagree and point out a difference is, as we've learned before, mezuzah is not meant to be learnt from. You just, you put it in the case and put it on the door, and that's that. And therefore, it's not really necessary to have any part of you have to have enough space on the sides, of course, that the letters won't go all the way to the end. Again, mukaf gvil, but you don't really need more than that. The mice and mezuzahs nowadays are generally made that way. So, the oisa parshiyos sep sukhos, and furthermore, the mayor, when he would write a mezuzah, would make the parshiyos sukhos. So not like we just said that Rav Huna would make him stumas. And as the Gemara is going to point out in a second, Rav Huna's Rebbe Rab holds that the halacha is like that. It's supposed to be pshuchas. So how would Rav Huna himself be doing them stumas? Amarti lois, Rav Shimon Elazar says, I asked the mayor Rebbe Matam, why are you making it a parsha psucha in the Torah? In the Torah, when you get to the end of then you find there's a parsha stuma over there. The next words in the Torah after that are after a parsha stuma, not psucha. So why in the mezuzah are you making it psucha? Tosfos, by the way, points out has some discussion about whether Reb Shimon Elazar was actually a Talmud of Reb Meir. If he was, then he would be saying Rebbe. If not, then maybe not necessarily. Tosfos discusses maybe there were two Reb Shimon Elazars anyway. So Omali, so the mayor answered, the reason why I'm writing it with Parsha Psucha, Peovein Smuchas Mina Torah, because these two Parshias are not right next to another in the Torah. One's in Parshas Vaschan, and one's a few chapters later in Parshas Eikev. So in other words, the mayor is saying, that Mela, if they were back to back in the Torah, then yeah, you have to write the Parsha brief between them the way you do in a Sefer Torah. But since anyway, here, there's several chapters and several columns apart in the Torah, then when you're writing them in a mezuzah, there's no problem to make them Psuchas. Now Rav Hananel says in the name of Rav that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar. My lava psuchas. Doesn't that mean that he refers to everything that Rav Shimon Elazar is describing here that a mayor would do, including the fact that it has to be psuchas? Now Rav Huna is a Talmud of Rav. So how is Rav Huna then going against his Rebbe and writing it with a parsha struma in the middle? So my answer is why? Not necessarily. Maybe when he says the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar, he means just al revach, he means as far as that space where it said there has to be space on top and on bottom, then he means the halacha is like that. Not necessarily is he agreeing with, not necessarily is Rav agreeing with Rav Shimon Elazar regarding the parshiyos in the mezuzah. Okay. The kamar revach, well, how much space do you have to leave on top and on bottom? So the Gemara says, Amr of Menashe by Yaakov, Va'amrila Amr of Shmo by Yaakov, Timloy Akva de Safri. The amount of space you have to leave is the size of the clip that sofrim use. A sofer is writing a mezuzah or anything else and needs to keep the parchment from curling up while he's writing. So he would use something to hold, to pin it in place while he's writing. So Rashi describes what they would do is they'd take a piece of wood, make a split in a piece of wood, the tension of the wood would try to hold it closed, and then you can use that as kind of like, it's sort of like a clothespin then. So that way you can use it to pin the clasp to the table or to whatever you're writing on. And that way it won't curl up. So now you put one of those on top of your parchment, and one on bottom of your parchment while you're writing. So then the space between the actual edge of the writing and this clip and the edge of the parchment should be the size of this clip. The post can talk about it, the size of half a fingernail would be the size of it.
It's machlokas a poskim, whether that means, so the Beis Yosef points out as a practical matter, again, you know, given that you have letters that have ascenders and descenders, you have lamed, you have langachofs, whatever, if you didn't leave that space, then they'd bump into the edge of the parchment and you have no muk of kvil. So according to him, in other words, the idea would be that the letters can stick out into that space, but in other words, that space should be above the bodies of the letters. On the other hand, there are poskim who learn that it means exclusive of it, that it means you have to have the space for the lamed and the chaf, or the lamed of the chaf, and besides that, you have to have the space for the clip. On the other hand, the poskim also talk about that the dievet, if you didn't do that, then the mezuzah may still be kosher. In fact, the Chazon Ish says as much. He says nowadays, sofrim don't use that kind of clip. Therefore, we don't necessarily need to leave that space. So they do, of course, leave a little space so that the letters don't bump into the edge, but they don't necessarily have to leave specifically an akva de safri on top and on bottom. In any case, the point is that if we look at it that way, then Rav is not saying the parshiyos should be psuchos like Rav Shimon Elazar is reporting that Rav Meir did. Rather, they can be stumos, and therefore Rav Huna was following that. However, Amalei Abayelet of Yosef, Va'afle Tishvara, so the Gemara asks, when we asked the question in the first place, what was the premise of the question? Isn't it obvious that he was talking about not the as far as the parashiyos, but only as far as the space on top and on bottom? Va'afle Tishvara Dekiomer Rav Areva. Don't you hold that when Rav was saying the halachas like Rav Shimon Elazar, he meant only as far as the space on top and on bottom? We know for sure it has to be that way. And Rav would hold that the proper way to make it is with parashiyos stumos like Rav Huna is reported to have done it. Because Rav Islay Minhaga, Rav holds very strongly that minhag, the way that people do things as a common minhag, is very important and halacha is established according to that. And nowadays the minhag of the Velt is to write them as a parashiyos stumah. In fact, the Maharik adds a point that there's no question. I mean, if Rav had said to make them stumas, then everybody else wouldn't have gone against him. So if everybody is doing stumas, and Rav Huna, for example, is doing it, it must be that Rav in fact said that way because he was the Rebbe of all the later Amoraim. And we know how important Rav considers Minag to be. Now let's talk about when it comes to Chalitza. Chalitza has to be done where the Yavama takes off the shoe, off the Yavam, but what kind of shoe are we talking about? So you have in those times, they have two major different kinds of shoes called minol, two major kinds of footwear called minol and sandal. Well, minol means a shoe, sandal literally means a sandal. So both of them are made out of leather. The difference is that the shoe actually covered most of the foot and the sandal did not. So the sandal would be more like sandals that we're familiar with nowadays. The truth is the Rishonim talk about we're not really certain anymore how sandals were made in the time of the Gemara and therefore what we're going to talk about now in the Gemara is not necessarily the practice nowadays, but in any case, the point is, the Gemara talks about in Yevamos, there are a few potential problems with using a minol, a shoe that covers most of the foot, rather than a sandal. One point is that a shoe might be partially ripped and a person would still wear it, whereas such a thing would be possible for chalitza. Another point is that sometimes you may even have a shoe is made out of several pieces of leather attached together, and some of them may be missing, and you'd still wear the shoe anyway, and even though it doesn't cover most of your foot, whereas that wouldn't work for chalitza. So in any case, the vote is like this then, Rav says, If Eliyahu HaNavi were to come and tell us that you can do chalitza with a shoe, then fine, we'll listen to him. We have no problem accepting that. In chilts and basandal, but if he tells us, not only, so fine, even though, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, they generally use a sandal for chalitza, if Eliyahu tells us a minol is fine, then fine, no problem. But if he says, in chilts and basandal, but if he were to tell us you cannot do chalitza with a sandal, in shomin loy, we would not pay attention to him, if I know I go on the sandal, because people already have the minhag to use a sandal, and in effect, basically, that minhag, so to speak, overrides the halacha. So the fact that people use a sandal, so even if Elio were to come and tell us, then we wouldn't pay attention to him. There is some discussion among Rishonim about this point. When exactly do we say that the Yerushalmi has an expression about this minag mevatel halacha, that a minag can actually override halacha? There's a Rishon, the Rashvash, who points out doesn't really mean that. It just means the Torah never says that a sandal can't be used. It means you can use whatever kind of footwear is normally used. But normally with other things, we would never say minig mevatel halacha. There's quite a bit of discussion about that. There's also an interesting discussion. What do we mean if Eliyahu would come to tell us that Eliyahu he comes back as a malach, like by Brisin or whatever, since when would we pay attention to him on anything of halacha anyway? And an explanation is that Eliyahu sometimes comes to earth in a body, and then at that point, in his times, he was the greatest Talmud Chacham of his period. He was the Makabal HaTorah. He was the one who received the whole tradition of Torah in his generation and passed it down to the next generation. It was just recently in Rambam. So by all means, if he comes in a body, we would listen to what he says in halacha, same as anything else, but not in this case, because he's telling us not to use a sandal, if he were to tell us not to use a sandal when everybody does use that. So that's one version of how the statement went. But Rabbi Yosef, Amar Rav Kahana, Amar Rav, Rabbi Yosef reported also in the name of Rav Kahana, in the name of Rav, the expression a little differently. Im Yavei Eliyahu, V'yama Ein Chiltzim Miminol, if Eliyahu were to come and tell us that we can't use a minol, a regular shoe, for chalitza, then fine, we would listen to him. Ein chutz and besandal, but if you were to tell us that you can't do chalitza with a sandal, ein shemin loy, we wouldn't listen to him. Shkan noago on besandal, because people already have the minhag of using a sandal. Now, so they're saying almost the same thing, but Rabbah had phrased it that if Elio were to say that we could use a minol, then fine, but if he tells us you can't use a sandal, then no good. Whereas Rabbi Yosef had said the expression, if he tells us you can't use a minol versus you can't use a sandal. So, Amrinan, and we explain, my benayu, what's the actual difference in halacha between Rabbah's and Rabbi Yosef's versions? And the answer is, minol lachatchila ikke benayu. Can you lachatchila use a minol, a regular shoe, according to Rabbah? No. If Elio comes and tells us that you could use a minol, then fine, gizun dehet, you can start using it. But until then, don't use it, use specifically a sandal. Whereas according to Rabbi Yosef, you could use a minol until Elio comes and tells us otherwise. So the point is, in other words, that we see Rabbi Yosef also considers minhag to be a very important thing, even to the extent that to a certain extent it can override halacha, and if Eliyahu were to come and tell us the halacha is you can't use a sandal, then we wouldn't pay attention to him. Well then, given that the popular minhag is to write a mezuzah with parshiyas stumos, then of course Rav never meant to say that the halacha is, when he says the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar, to say as far as making parshiyas psuchas. So therefore, so obviously, when we first brought up the question, says Abaya to Rabbi Yosef, why did we even think that there should be a question? Obviously, Rav holds that there should be stumas, and Rav Huna, and Rav Chelver tells us that Rav Huna did exactly that. Elalav shmamino areva. Necessarily, therefore, that proves that when Rav said the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar, he means only as far as the space on top and on bottom, but not as far as As far as this matter of chalitza, Tosfos points out that eventually over time the minhag changed. Nowadays, in fact, we use a minol because we're not really so bucky, we're not really so familiar with how the sandals were made in the times of the Gemara, and we don't want to do the wrong thing. Also, the truth is the chalitza shoe that's made nowadays is not really a foot piece, it has straps or whatever. It's an odd looking kind of shoe. It's constructed somewhat differently than the normal kind of shoes we wear nowadays. In particular, everything of it, including the straps and everything, is made out of leather, and those straps are wound around the bottom part of the foot. You can find pictures online, but we don't use a sandal per se, which is made out of hard leather, because Tosfos is saying we're not really familiar with how those were made exactly. Getting back to the mezuzah as far as the parashiyas psuchos or stumas. So we have one answer so far that yes, definitely Rav means that you should make them stumas. And when he said the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar reporting what Rav Meir did, he just means as far as having a space on top and on bottom. Rav Nachman Yitzchok has a different understanding of it. Mitzvah lasos and stumas. The proper way is to make the parashas and the mezuzah stumas, because again, the parashas Shema in a sefer Torah it ends there with the parashas stumah, and the next words in the Torah after that are on the same line. Yeah, you know psuchas, but if you made it with psuchas chapter dummy, then it would be also fine. Or my psuchas to come Reb Shimon Elazar. So when Reb Shimon Elazar says that Reb Meir would write them psuchas, he means af psuchas. It means that Reb Meir didn't mind one way or the other if he'd write them either psuchas or stumas. They could be stumas because that's how it is in the Torah. They could be psuchas because, as he said to Reb Shimon Elazar, the fact is they're not adjacent in the Torah, and therefore either way is fine. So here's where Tosfos gets into the whole discussion of exactly what is the definition of a parasha psucha or a stumah, and because of this Gemara and because of the different opinions among the Rishonim, there are different minhagim nowadays of exactly how a mezuzah should be written. Based on Rav Nachman Yitzchok's statement that the best way is to do it stumas, so we do write it as a parasha stumah. However, the question then becomes, we don't actually write the end of Shema and the beginning of Vahoyim Shemaya on the same line. We actually do start Vahoyim Shemaya on a new line. So how do we make it a stumah then in order to accommodate all the opinions? So we really can't. There's no way to make it that according to both the Rambam and the Rosh, it will be a parasha stumah unless you have them on the same line. So therefore we have different minhagim, Sfardic Sofrim, and Uvisharecha at the end of a line, and then they leave a space at the beginning of the next line and start Vahoyim Shemaya there. Ashkenazim leave a larger space at the end of Uvisharecha and a smaller space at the beginning of Vahoyim Shemaya. And then Minig Chabad is to leave a larger space in both places. There's actually in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch in his first Truva, in his first of his Shilas HaTruvas, which it seems was originally a Kuntas Achron that he had written on Hilchos Tefillin. Now the Alter Rebbe goes in there and discusses in some detail about the whole matter of the parasha spaces between parashiyas. There he's the context there. He's talking about Tefillin, but he also talks about mezuzah as well. And it comes out that it comes out according to the Alter Rebbe that the proper way to do it is to leave a large space at the end of a Visharecha, and a large space, each when we say a large space means the space to write at least 9 letters at the beginning of Vahoyim Shemaya, and the Alter Rebbe discusses over there that way you can be Yotze more of the possible opinions. So that's how we do it in practice. So the Gemara continues, Lema Messiah, can we say that the following Braisa supports Rav Nachman Yitzchok that it's fine to do them as either, that's fine to do them as either psuchas or stumas, that to begin with, lachatchila, they should be stumas, but if you make them psuchas, then v'dievet it's fine. A Braisa says, first the Braisa starts talking about the point that you can't take something from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala. You can't take something which had a higher level of Kedusha and bring it down to lower kedusha. So first the Braisa talks about, which we'll talk about in the next, we'll talk about in a couple of dafim when we get to the halachas of tefillin, that, for example, you can take a tefillin shor yad and make it into a tefillin shor rosh, but not the other way around. Because the tefillin shor rosh is considered to have greater kedusha because it has more letters of Hashem's name together with it. You have the shin of the name shin dalad yod. You have the shin embossed on the bias of the tefillin shor rosh, and you have the dalad knot in the back, as opposed to the shor yad only has the yod. So therefore the Braisa says if you want to turn a tefillin shor yad into a tefillin shor rosh, you're able to do that, but not the other way around. Then the Braisa continues, Kayotzebo, similarly, sefer Torah shabola, if a sefer Torah is worn out and you can't use it for laning anymore, or tefillin shabolu, or tefillin got worn out, ein os mehen mezuzah, you're not allowed to make them into a mezuzah. You're not allowed to take the portions of Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya from them and make them into a mezuzah for the same reason. Lefishen meridin, mekdusha chamura, lekdusha kala, because you can't take from a higher level of kedusha to a lower one. Tefillin and a sefer Torah are considered to have a greater kedusha than mezuzah. Basically because of how much there is in them. The sefer Torah has the whole Torah in it. Tefillin has 4 parashiyos. Mezuzah has only 2, and therefore the mezuzah has the least kedusha of all of them. Um, so uh, So now, the Gemara points out, homeridin. Now, if that weren't an issue, if you were allowed to take something from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala, then it would have been perfectly fine to do that, and you would be able, hypothetically, if it weren't for that issue of Enmeridin, then you would hypothetically be able to take a parasha of Shema, or Vahoyim Shemaya, from a Sefer Torah, or from Tefillin, and make it into a mezuzah. Tosfos points out, the minhag of Sofrim is that In Tefillin Shor Rosh, and in Tefillin Shor Yad, each of the parashas is written on four long lines. In the Shor Rosh, each parasha is written on seven lines. In a mezuzah, it's written in 22 lines, but none of that is ma'akiv. You can write them with more or fewer lines, so it is perfectly possible in that sense to have a piece from a Sefer Torah that could hypothetically be used for a mezuzah, and we're saying you can't only because of the factor of Ein Meridin Mekdusha Chamura L'Kedusha Kala. Now, the question is, am I? How would that be able to work anyway? Now, in the Sefer Torah, Shema is, again, ends with a Parashat Stuma. Vahoyim Shemaya also begins with a Parashat Stuma that you have on the same line. In the Sefer Torah, you have the words before it. The Hochab Suchas. And here we were just discussing that apparently according to the simple meaning of what Rabbi Shimon Elazar says, the Parashat break between Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya is supposed to be a Psucha. Therefore, that demonstrates that the parashiyas and the mezuzah are not in fact psuchos. So therefore, that would prove Rav Nachman Yitzchok's point that you the better way is to make them stumas. If you made them psuchos, then fine, as Rav Meir had said, the diavad you yotze. So that would be a proof for him. However, the Gemara says, Duma Lahashvin. Maybe that's not really such a proof, because maybe the Braisa means, let's say, for example, the mezuzah is missing one line, and then you wanted to take, let's say, that last line and cut it out of a worn-out Sefer Torah and attach it to the mezuzah, and then you would do that. So sew it to the parchment to the mezuzah, and then you have a complete mezuzah. So therefore, it could well be that the mezuzah itself was written with parashas psuchos, and they'll remain that way, and you're only adding one line from a sefer Torah or from tefillin that you're attaching to the mezuzah. There is quite a bit of Tosfos disagrees with that, because Tosfos points out that there is a Yerushalmi that says that tefillin and mezuzah, each parish has to be written on one piece of parchment. Suppose Tosfos says if they're sewn together, then it would still be fine. But then Tosfos says another way you could understand is, let's say, for example, so you have, let's say, the parasha of Shema was written at the bottom of a column in a Sefer Torah, and now you have the space underneath it. We learned yesterday about the fourth voice of space that you have to have at the bottom of the column of a Sefer Torah. Conceivably, then the Sefer could cut out the Shema from that worn-out Sefer Torah, write V'Hoyim Shemaya in that space that used to be the margin of the Torah, and use it as a mezuzah. It would have worked if it weren't for the problem of that you can't take from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha column. Tosfos says the other possibility as well would be the other way around. Let's say V'Hoyim Shemaya was written at the top of the column. Now, here there's an interesting point in that regard, because the Taz points out a mezuzah has to be written in order. If you write it Shaloi Kassidron, and you write it out of order, it would be possible. So how is it possible that you would have V'Hoyim Shemaya from an existing Sefer Torah, and then you would cut it out and write Shema above it? Then it would be Shaloi Kassidron. So the Taz argues that maybe Shaloi Kassidron doesn't apply if the parashiyas themselves are written out of order, only if within one parashah itself you write out of order. The Shach and the Kudas HaKesef argues and says that there's no need to say that. There's a couple of possibilities. First of all, of course, Tosfos might just be talking to give us a hypothetical, how it's possible, what the Gemara means Mahashlin, not that it would actually be kosher la'alocha, and then he brings a couple of other possibilities how it could work as well. So there's also the question, given that if in the Sefer Torah Shema and V'Hoyim Shemaya Shema ends and V'Hoyim Shemaya begins with a Parashas Truma, then how would you be able to cut out just those and have a kosher mezuzah, even if it weren't for the matter of Kedusha Chamura, Kedusha Kala. So, and after all, you can't have anything extra, so it's not like you can have the extra text between them in the mezuzah. Some of Foshim talk about a couple of interesting possibilities. First of all, the parasha after Shema in the Torah does in fact begin with the words Behoya. So let's say that in the Sefer Torah, the Parasha of Shema was written, and then you have the Parasha of Struma, then you have that one word V'hoya on the line. Hypothetically, for example, the Sfas Emes talks about you would be able to cut that out and then go and attach it to another piece that has from Im Shamoya until the end of it. This is the Chidushim Amiyuchasim La Rashba makes that point. Different other Mephoshim talk about different other possibilities of how conceivably such a thing could be accomplished without, and you still have the whole thing. So again, you would have, let's say, for example, that what the Chidushim Amiyuchasim La Rashba says is that you could have, let's say, for example, that you could cut it. So he says what you could do is, let's say, for example, so you have that word v'hoya, for example. Other Mephoshim talk about maybe you could cut it on an angle and leave off the word v'hoya. And then there's an interesting possibility. The Chidushim on Yechasim La Rashba says maybe what you could do is you could have, let's say, for example, the entire sheet of the Torah that began with Shema and ends with V'hoyim Shemaya maybe could constitute a mezuzah. You have several parashiyos in between. Those don't belong over there, and therefore we could consider as though those are ignored. Or the Sfas Emes points out maybe you could erase them. Another interesting idea, Rav Chaim Kanievsky suggests that you might conceivably have a Sefer Torah with very, very, very long columns such that you could have conceivably Shema and Bahayim Shemaya could be at the bottoms or at the tops of adjacent columns, and then conceivably you could cut them out from there and use it. But again, so if it were, you can't in the end, because you can't take from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala, but these are all various hypotheticals of how conceivably it could have been done without us having to assume necessarily that a mezuzah should preferentially have Parshias Strumas. So it's not really a solid proof for what Rav Nachman Yitzchak is saying. Maybe in fact the better way is to do Parshas Psuchos, like we said before, like Rav Meir did. But it's not a contradiction, but it's not a proof either. Again, Lamaisa, the halacha is we do a struma, but in order to have V'hoyim Shemaya begin on a new line, then we do a special kind of struma where you have the different minhagim among different sofrim based on different poskim of exactly how to do it. The Gemara continues. So here's another question. Homeridin, now here's another question. So you're telling me hypothetically we could have taken a piece of a Sefer Torah and made it into a mezuzah, except for the problem that a Sefer Torah has greater kedusha, and therefore you can't do it. The question is, they're written on different writing materials anyway. Homeridin oisin, so you're telling me if you could take it down in kedusha, it would have been allowed, it would have been possible. But Hatanya, the problem is, we learn in a braisa, halacha l'moshe m'sinai, tefillin ala klaf, The problem is that tefillin are supposed to be written. So here we're talking about particularly when we said that you could have hypothetically taken a parasha of tefillin and used it for a mezuzah. But tefillin and mezuzahs are written on different parts of the skin. Tefillin are written on klaf, mezuzah on duchsistus. We'll explain in a second what those are. Klaf v'mokem baser, the tefillin which are written on klaf, you write on the place closer to the flesh of the animal, on the inner surface of it. Duchsistus v'mokem seir, and when you write on duchsistus, you write on the side, on the hair side, on the outer side. The idea is like this, in other words, you have the skin of an animal as you take it off the animal. If you leave it unsplit and you tan it, then it's called, and you make it into parchment, then it's called gvil. Gvil means something unprocessed, like unfinished. Elsewhere, the Gemara talks about that's the preferred writing material for a Sefer Torah. Then you can take the skin and split it into two layers, basically the dermis and the epidermis, more or less. One of those is going to be klaf, one of those is going to be duchsistus. I'll focus on showing him which one is which. Tosfos and a number of Rishonim hold that duchsistus is the inner layer and klaf is the outer layer. So according to them, then the idea would be that with duchsistus, when you're writing a mezuzah on duchsistus, that, and they explain actually the word duchsistus comes, duch is Aramaic for place. Sustus, Tosfos explains, in various places means is either a Greek word or a Median word for flesh. So therefore, duchsistus means the place of the flesh, means the layer of the skin that's closer to the flesh. So according to them, when you're writing on that, what you would do is you would take the two layers, split them one apart from the other, And then if you're writing on Duch Sisters, you would write on the outside of it, namely the side that originally was attached to the other layer. And then if you're writing on Klaf, as we're saying over here, Tefillin has to be written on Klaf, then you would write on the inside, on the side which was, again, the side where the split was done. So according to Tosfos's definition, with both of them, you write on the side where they were originally joined together. The Rambam has a tshuva where he says the other way around. In fact, in the Yad HaChazaka, there are different gusos in the Rambam. It seems the Rambam's original gusa was the opposite, but you can find many, many printed editions of Rambam that have it the other way around. Apparently, people tried to correct the Rambam's writing, the Rambam's opinion, to mesh with Tosfos's. Anyway, the Rambam says clearly in a tshuva, the other way around, Duchsis is the outer layer, Klaf is the inner layer, and therefore it means with each one of them, you're writing on the side that was not attached to the other one. So with Klaf, so with Duchsis just being according to the Rambam, the outer layer, you write on the hair side of it, which was not attached to anything. And with Klaf, you'd write on the inner layer where it was attached to the flesh. And the post can talk about certain exact details of nowadays how parchment is processed and made and which one of those it is. The conclusion is that our modern parchment is always Klaf. So we're saying over here that Klaf is supposed to be used for tefillin, but Duchsistus is supposed to be used for a mezuzah. Well, that being the case, then how would it be possible to take a piece of tefillin and use it for mezuzah? And the answer is lemitzvah. That just means the proper mitzvah, the proper way of doing it, is to write a mezuzah on Duchsistus. But you could write it on Klaf, so therefore, hypothetically, you could take a piece of a parasha of tefillin and use it for a parasha of mezuzah, were it not for the problem of Ein Merid Mekdusha Chamura L'Kdusha Kala. So the Gemara says, well, Tanya Shina Posel, but we have another braisa that says that if you change that, then it would be Posel. So therefore, that means that it has to be, that a mezuzah dafka has to be on Duchsistus. The answer is no, but tefillin. That's referring only to tefillin. If you write tefillin on anything else other than klaf, then they're posel. But if you write a mezuzah on klaf, it would be posel. So the Gemara says, Valtanya, Shina, Bein Bezeh, or Bein Bezeh posel. Another braisa says more clearly that if you changed either one or the other, then it's posel. So it sounds like either one, whether you write a mezuzah on klaf or whether you write tefillin on duchsis, then it's no good. The answer is no. Idi with tefillin. Both statements, both braises, are in fact talking about, and this last braise, when it says ben bezeh, all referring to tefillin. What it means is v'hod kasvinu aklaf b'makom seir. One is referring to you use the right writing material. You use klaf. However, we define klaf according to the different rishonim, whether it means the inner or the outer layer. But you wrote b'makom seir. You wrote on the hair side, on the side that faced towards the outside when the animal is alive. And we just said before that klaf you're supposed to write on the inner side. So that would be possible. B'hod kasvinu abduchsis b'makom baser. The other thing, when it says bein bezeh, would refer to if you use duchsis and you wrote on the correct side for duchsis. So that's fine. You wrote on the correct side, but it's duchsis and you can't use that for tefillin. So we don't have to say the braisa is addressing at all the question of whether a mezuzah can be written on klaf. Maybe in fact it can be, and in fact the fact that we said before that conceivably you could have used a parasha of tefillin to make a mezuzah supports that because tefillin by definition have to be written on klaf. In the end, the Rambam writes that with all three of these, tefillin and mezuzah and sefer Torah, even though the original lachatchila dikha thing was supposed to be a sefer Torah on gvil, tefillin on klaf, mezuzah on duchsis, in practice, the Rambam points out that based on this gemara, based on other gemaras, all of them are kosher on klaf as well, and nowadays pretty much the universal minhag is to do all of them on klaf. And for defining what klaf is, most of the Jewish world follows Tosfos's opinion, and makes klen and the Rosh and other Rishonim and makes klaf to be the outer layer, and then they write on the inside of it, the side where it was split apart from the duchsis layer. Nowadays they don't actually split it apart, but they it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. What they do is they scrape away certain parts of the skin to make a nice smooth writing surface, and they scrape off only a little bit from the outside, but they scrape off much more from the inside, and therefore it has a din of klaf. There are, I think, some Yemenite Kehillahs that do the other way around, that do according to the Rambam's definition, according to the Rambam's original definition, and have klaf be the inner layer, and they write on the inside side of that. So the bottom line is, in other words, it's very possible to write a mezuzah on klaf. And the Gemara continues, V'boisema, another way you can answer, Shina b'zeo b'zetz hanoi. As a matter of fact, you could say, when we had one braisa that said, that when we had one braisa that said that if you write a mezuzah on cloth, then the braisa had implied that it says posel, and another one had implied that it's kosher, and the only reason that you can't take a piece of tefillin to use for a mezuzah is because ein meridin mekdusha chamura lekdusha kala. Well, the Gemara points out shine bezer was that tanoihi. This you can well say that this is a machlok this tanoihi. D'tanya, shine bezer bezer posel. If you changed either one, you wrote tefillin on duchsa sosa or mezuzah on klas, then it would be posel. But Rab Acha machshir mishum Rab Achoy b'Rab Chanina. But Rab Acha, in the name of Rab Achoy b'Rab Chanina, says that it's kosher. V'amilam shmei de Rab Akiva b'Rab Chanina. Others say that he said in the name of Rab Akiva b'Rab Chanina, or on the side it's here, it says it's supposed to be Rab Yaakov b'Rab Chanina. Anyway, so the different braises that talk about can you write a mezuzah on klas, and, or can you not, those would reflect these different opinions of Tanoim. Okay. The Gemara asks another question. So again, going back to this idea that hypothetically we could have used something from a Sefer Torah or from Tefillin to use for a mezuzah, and you can't because ein meridin mekdusha chamura lekdusha kala. Here's another question that they seem to be dissimilar. So far we went through that they seem to be dissimilar about the parashiyos. We said not necessarily. Maybe they're dissimilar as far as the writing material, also not necessarily. But here's another question. The implication again is that if you could take it down a level of chedusha, then you would be allowed to. The question is, well, boy, sirtut. The question is that a mezuzah requires sirtut, as opposed to tefillin, we do not. Sirtut is where the sofer takes a stylus or something like that and inscribes straight lines on the parchment. This way his writing will be neat. The sofer then goes and hangs the top of each line underneath that ruled line. And then that way the lines are nice and neat. A mezuzah, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, it has to have sirtut. Tefillin do not. So therefore, tefillin are not necessarily written with sirtut, and therefore, so how would you be able to take a piece of tefillin anyway? How is it even possible to take it and use it for a mezuzah that was saying that not? Tosfos learns that actually a Sefer Torah as well does not, strictly speaking, require sirtut. So Tosfos points out, the fact is you could find, obviously it's possible to find where they did do sirtut, but they didn't regularly do that. Generally speaking, they did not do that to a Sefer Torah or tefillin because Tosfos brings a point that we find in Halacha, kol ha-potter min ha-davar va'oseyo nikra hedyot. If somebody's potter from something and does it anyway, then he's called a hedyot, he's called like an ignorant person. What are you doing in this connection that you really don't need to do? So even though hypothetically a Sefer Torah or tefillin could have been written with sirtut, in practice, Tosfos says a sofer wouldn't do it. But then Tosfos goes on and discusses more about it. Tosfos brings under the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam that a Sefer Torah does require sirtut because Zekei Livan Veyu Tefillin. They're in their cases all the time anyhow. So therefore, if you didn't write the lines so neat, then we don't care so much. And Tosfos goes on to discuss the whole matter of the flal. Are you allowed to? You're not even allowed to write psukim without sirtut. So how anyway could we talk? We talking about Tefillin and possibly a Sefer Torah not requiring sirtut And one explanation is that you do at least need sirtut on the top and on the bottom and on the sides, but you don't necessarily need sirtut for each individual line. Lamaisa, so from nowadays, universally do sirtut for everything, apparently because over time they found in practice that they can't really write neatly without it. So therefore, in that case, the question of the Gemara would kind of go away, but the Gemara is asking, according to the original din, that tefillin don't require sirtut, as opposed to a mezuzah does. And again, the idea being that, as Tosfos is saying, if it doesn't require it, then they wouldn't do it. So therefore, it requires sirtut. And we know, but the mezuzah does require sirtut, and we know that. Any mezuzah that does not have sirtut is possible. Now, Rav Manyumi Bar Chilkiya had reported in the name of Rav Chama Bar Guria, in the name of Rav, that it requires sirtut, and if not, it's possible. Rav Manyumi Bar Chilkiya himself said, without quoting from his Rebbeim, sirtut from mezuzah, Allah from Moshe Mishinai. The fact that a mezuzah requires sirtut is actually Allah from Moshe Mishinai. As opposed to, again, by tefillin, you don't require sirtut, and according to one possibility in Tosfos, neither does a sefer Torah. So therefore, even if it weren't for a problem of kedusha chamura, kedusha kala, you wouldn't be able anyway to take a piece of a tefillin or sefer Torah and use it for a mezuzah. And again, the Gemara answers Tanoihi. This is actually a machlokas Tanoim. The Tanya, Rabbi Yumi Yomi Mishum Rabbeinu, tefillin and mezuzahs, nichtavas, shalom and aksav, tefillin and mezuzahs can be written without having a written text in front of you. Meaning, when you're writing a Sefer Torah or a Megillah or whatever, you're supposed to have in front of you another Sefer Torah or Megillah or a tikkun sofrim at least, and copy word for word from that. But here, when it comes to tefillin and mezuzahs, you don't need that. You can write them from memory because everybody knows these parashiyos more or less by heart. So you can write them without having a written sefer in front of you. The Ein Sricha Sirtut, and Rabbi Yemiya says in the name of Rabbeinu that they also don't require a sirtut. So he disagrees with what we just said, that it's halacha Moshe Sinai that we do. So therefore, so now the Braisa on Amar Aleph that talked about where you could conceivably have taken a piece of the sefer Torah or tefillin and make it into a mezuzah would be following this opinion that mezuzah doesn't require sirtut either, and therefore that's not, and therefore that doesn't, that, and therefore that's not an issue. Now, the Rambam points out that whenever you have something that's halacha l'mishum sinai, you can't possibly have a machloikas about it. But what that means is, apparently what the Rambam means, since we see over here, there's an example, Rabbi Binyamin bar Chilkiah is saying it's halacha l'mishum sinai, and Rabbi Yirmiyah is disagreeing. So apparently what the Rambam means is that if the Chachamim have accepted that something is halacha l'mishum sinai, then they're not going to argue with it. But they can argue among themselves whether something is a halacha l'mishum sinai in the first place, as they do here.
Okay.
The Gemara says v'hilchsa. The bottom line halacha is tefillin leboy sirtur. Tefillin do not require sirtur. Mezuzah boyas sirtur. However, mezuzah does require sirtur. It does have to have those lines ruled before you start writing it. The Ran explains the reason behind it is because both of them are in cases, but the difference is a mezuzah, as we're going to learn further on in our sugya over here, a mezuzah has to be checked at least twice in 7 years, so therefore it's important that because it's attached to the wall, and over time it may get damp from the wall and get ruined, and therefore you have to check it at least twice every 7 years, and therefore you want the writing in it to be straight and neat, and therefore it requires sirtur. Tefillin, in principle, only have to be checked. Tefillin, in principle, as long as you're wearing tefillin every day, you really only have to check them as a matter of strict halacha only once every yovel, once every 50 years. So it's not so important if the writing is straight. Lamaisa, nowadays, we check our tefillin much more often than that, and Lamaisa nowadays, sofrim universally do sirtut for tefillin as well. And the Gemara continues, and also the halacha is, both a mezuzah and tefillin can be written without having a written text in front of you. My timer, why is that? Because as we just said, nigras grisin, because they're regularly said by people. Everybody, you say shema and v'hoyim shemoya every day. Many people also say kaddish and v'hoyim kiviyacha, especially our minigas we say in Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin, others do it even in Rashi tefillin. So these parashiyos are well familiar to everybody, and therefore, so it's less likely they're gonna make a mistake. So a sefer Torah, you have to write from a written text in front of you, and a megillah as well, but tefillin and mezuzahs you don't.
A sinekraf, a sirtuk, should require checking more often than a thikraf. Why is the opposite?
So what the Ran is saying is that when you have something which is checked very rarely, then it doesn't require sirtuk. Since me'ikar adin, tefillin need to be checked only once every 50 years, and maybe not even then therefore they don't require sirtuk. As opposed to a mezuzah, you're going to have to open up the case and check it at least every twice in 7 years, and therefore it's going to require sirtuk.
Okay, what requires sirtuk, a mezuzah or a tefillin?
So in the end, we had different opinions. So we said over here like this. Everybody agrees that tefillin do not. A mezuzah, we had a machloikas. We had Rabbi Yumi bar Chilkiah saying that's halacha l'moshe Sinai, that it does require sirtuk, and we had Rabbi Yumi saying that it does not. The final halacha, the Gemara says, is a mezuzah does require sirtuk, tefillin does not. So now, the logic behind it, the Ran explains, is that a mezuzah is opened up and checked more often than tefillin, and therefore you want the writing to be neat. In other words, you're going to be seeing the writing more. The idea of sirtuk is that the writing should be in nice, neat, straight lines. It's part of Zekei Livan Veyu, to make the mitzvah beautiful. So a mezuzah, which is checked twice every 7 years, then you want it to be beautiful. Tefillin, which me'ikar adin, need to be checked only very rarely, we don't care so much if the writing is not so beautiful and straight. But again,
tefillin has much more kedusha than
mezuzah. Nevertheless, they're not opened up. They're not opened up to check the parashiyos as often.
But you would think it's the opposite. The more kedusha there is, the more checking it needs.
The fact is, though, the reason why it doesn't is because a mezuzah is attached to the wall, and therefore it's more likely to absorb dampness from the wall and to get ruined after a while. Tefillin, you put them on your head. They don't really absorb dampness from your head unless every day you put them on. If you put them on every day with wet hair, then I suppose you might have a problem, but ordinarily you don't do that. Therefore, the parashiyos are much less exposed to any damage. They're safely inside the bakim, and therefore, in principle, you don't have to check them very often.
Mm-hmm.
Right. As far as the Sefer Torah, again, Tosfos has a machlokas over here, whether a Sefer Torah requires Sirtut or not. Tosfos points out there's no question, again, it would require at least Sirtut on the top and bottom and sides, because you can't write even three letters of a pasuk without Sirtut, but Tosfos discusses maybe it doesn't necessarily need Sirtut for every line. Again, like I said, even though Tosfos says that when you don't need to do something, nikra hedyot, and you shouldn't do it, in practice, it's universal among Sofrim nowadays that they do Sirtut.
What's more likely to be damaged, a mezuzah or a tefillin?
So based on what we're saying, a mezuzah, because a mezuzah is exposed.
Not based on what we're saying. In fact, has there been any study of that?
I have no idea, and it probably depends. It probably depends on a lot of different circumstances, because you think about it, for example, nowadays, we have weatherproof cases for mezuzahs. Nowadays, our houses are not as damp and drafty as they used to be, so there's probably much less chance that a mezuzah gets exposed to the elements and ruined. Nevertheless, the halacha is still the halacha. You have to check them at least twice in 7 years. Tefillin, again, in principle, the halacha, in theory, the halacha is you only need to check tefillin very rarely. The Gemara, I think we're going to have it, I think, in a couple of blocks. The Gemara is going to mention that point. Lemaisa, though, people are noyed to check their tefillin also at least twice in 7 years. And, of course, you anyway have the minhag that people, many people have the minhag actually to check them every elul as well. So in practice, they get checked a lot more often than that.
So both mezuzah and tefillin, are you yotzei when it's damaged or not?
Depends on what kind of damage we're talking about. If a letter is cracked, for example, or smudged or whatever, then no, you're not yotzei with it. If we're just talking about, for example, let's say a blank area on it, got a water droplet on it or something, that's not going to be a problem.
No, something that would render it pasul.
Yeah, then you're not yotzei. Yeah, that's what we said in the Mishnah. I feel ksav hachamah, even one letter makes it no good. Yeah.
So if that's the case, they should be checked at the same time, both the mezuzah and tefillin.
Yeah, and it's a good idea to, but you're not actually required to la halacha. Do we have to distinguish between what's required la halacha and what's a good idea? The idea is, in other words, basically we can consider that something has a cheskas kashrus. If we knew that something was kosher until now, then we can assume that it's kosher unless we have reason to be concerned for the contrary. So with a mezuzah, again, given that it's exposed to the dampness of the wall, there's more of a possibility that it got damaged, and therefore you need to check it more often as opposed to tefillin.
Since you're moving the tefillin all the time, it's much more likely to be damaged than a mezuzah.
You're thinking
much
of the vatim. The vatim are much more likely to be damaged. Sure, you could drop them.
No, I'm thinking about the...
We're talking about the parashiyos. The parashiyos are safe.
Yeah, I'm talking about the parashiyos.
Okay, I don't know.
No, you move them all the time.
Okay, I don't know. All right, anyway, let's go on. Okay. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Chelboi, since we mentioned something that Rav Chelboi saw Rav Huna doing as far as writing a mezuzah, so the Gemara mentions another thing that he said, that he saw Rav Huna doing. Amar Rav Chelboi, Ano Chaziti, Rav Huna, I saw Rav Huna, Davi Yosef Apuya, the Sefer Torah Alei, that he was sitting on a bed on which there was also a Sefer Torah. And a different girsa from a Gemara in Moed Cotton is that he was going to sit on the bed. Not that he actually sat on it yet, but what did he do? So he's not sitting on the same level as a Sefer Torah. The Kof L'Kada A'ara, what he took is he took a jug and overturned it and put it on the ground to make a makeshift stand, V'anachalei, and then he placed the Sefer Torah, V'anachalei Sefer Torah, and he placed the Sefer Torah on that, V'hodu Yosef, and only then he sat down on the bed. Why? Kasava, because Rav Huna holds, also Leishiv Amita Shasefer Torah, Munachalaya, you're not allowed to sit on a bed or any other, or a chair or anything like that, on which a Sefer Torah is, because not the Kovadik to the Sefer Torah. The Gemara mentions in Moed Cotton that when Rav Huna passed away, they wanted to put a Sefer Torah on the bier that they were taking him to be buried in. Because they said, you know, he's such an outstanding Talmud Chacham, we should be able to say on him that he fulfilled everything that it says in this Torah. But then one of his Talmudim pointed out that Rav Chelboy pointed out that they're exactly not. We actually see that Rav Huna would not sit on a Sefer Torah on a bed that had a Sefer Torah on it while he was alive. So how can we now, after he passed away, put a Sefer Torah on the same bed that his body is lying on? So the Gemara points to Pliga de Rav Baba Chana. In that, Rav Huna argues with Rav Baba Chana. The Amar Rav Baba Chana, Amar Yechanan, Mutal Leishav Amit Agam Mitzvah Sefer Torah Munach Aleihem. Rav Yechanan says, Rav Baba Chana says in the name of Rav Yechanan, you are allowed to sit on a bed where a Sefer Torah is placed on it. The im lochshach adam, and if somebody is going to whisper you loyma and tell you no, where I can prove to you that you can't. Ma'aseh Rabbi Lozer for Yosef alamita. It happened once that Rabbi Lozer was sitting on a bed, v'nisgar shesefer Torah munach aleihem, and then he realized that a sefer Torah was lying on that same bed. The nishmat, and he immediately moved himself off the bed. The yoshav agabe karka, and he sat on the ground. The doma kamishi kishay nochas, he acted as though a snake had bit him, like he was shocked, like he right away got off the bed as fast as possible and went on the floor. And he was stirred, and he was shocked as though he had been bitten by a snake. So then you're going to say, Rav Yochanan would say, well, in that case, doesn't that prove you can't sit on a bed that has a sefer Torah on it? Tell him no. Hosam sefer Torah agabe Kautahava. No, in that case, actually, what happened was the Sefer Torah was actually on the floor, and that was what bothered, Rabbi Lozer so much. But had it been on the bed, it wouldn't have bothered him so much, because Rabbi Yochanan says, in fact, you are allowed to sit on a bed like that. So the Chiddushim of Yochasim LaRashba points out, so what is the machlokas and the Metzius, whether the Sefer Torah was on the bed or on the floor. So he explains that it means it was like on the lower part of the bed, closer to the floor. So therefore he felt bad that now he had sat let's say, for example, sometimes you have beds or couches or whatever that have like shelves built into the bottom of them. So therefore, so the Sefer Torah was on the lower shelf over there, and he felt bad that he's sitting higher up than that, but not that it was necessarily actually on the floor. So Rav David Luria gives a different explanation. He says that Rav Elazar sat down on this bed and realized that usually a Sefer Torah was placed on here. And then he noticed that instead of it being on the bed, it was on the floor. Somebody had put it over there so that it wouldn't be on the same bed that Rav Elazar was on. So now Rav Elazar was shocked and like as though a snake had bit him, so that they could put the Sefer Torah back on the bed. So therefore, according to that, then it's not a machlokas l'metzius. It means the Sefer Torah was normally placed on this bed, but this time somebody well-meaning had placed it on the floor, thinking that that would be better so Rabbi Elazar could sit on the bed, but Rabbi Elazar didn't want to do that. Who is the halacha like? Tosfos argues that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. You are allowed to sit on a bed where sit on a bed or a chair or whatever where a Sefer Torah is on it. Tosfos gives a reason for that the halacha is usually like Rabbi Yochanan, even against Rav. How much more so against Rav Huna, who was Rav's Talmud. On the other hand, many of the other Paskin, like Rav Huna, that is also true, and that is the accepted halacha that you can't do that. So, in fact, not just a Sefer Torah, but other Sforim as well, you're not supposed to sit on a bench or a chair or whatever that has Sforim on it. The Gemara continues with a couple more dinim of the mezuzah. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel Kosva Igeres. If you wrote the Sefer Torah, if you wrote the mezuzah like a letter, meaning either without sirtut or without paying attention to the spellings of the words, psula, then it would be possible. My time asya ksiva ksiva misafer, because we learn xeder shava on the word ksiva from writing a sefer, from writing a get or a Sefer Torah. We find by a mezuzah or chasavtam a mezuzah pesecho visharacha, and then you find by a get the chosav la sefer krisus or a Sefer Torah as a whole ksiva this is torin vasefer. So just like a Sefer Torah has to be written very precisely, and a get has to be written very precisely, the same way a mezuzah has to be written very precisely, and if he put in extra letters or left out other letters, then it would be possible. There's a discussion, Tosfos points out that, wait, we said before, as far as Sirtut, we said before, is Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. So Tosfos explains that primarily it means the second thing. He didn't follow the proper Masorah, he wasn't careful about Chaseidus V'Yaseidus, he just wrote it like a letter. Tosfos points out it doesn't mean a letter is often written in short lines. That's not a problem. We learned before in the Gemara that the mezuzah can be written in short lines, and that's not a problem. Then the Shikim Kubetzis points out another possibility that Zeta Shova is actually from the parasha of Stoika, and that's how we're learning it from. So, in any case, so there's quite a bit of discussion about the ins and outs of this, of what exactly needs Sirtut and what doesn't. But the point is the mezuzah has to be written very precisely. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with more dinim of mezuzah, and then we'll start talking about how the mezuzah, till now we've been focusing on how the mezuzah is to be written, so we'll talk about a little more of that, but mainly we're gonna focus from now on how the mezuzah is placed.
Ashkeach.